Hello and welcome to Weapons and Warfare for Straight Arrow News. I'm your host, Ryan Robertson, and this is not only our final episode of the year, but it's our 50th. With that being the case, we wanted to take the opportunity and do a little looking back at the road we've traveled in 2024, both metaphorical and literal. In January, we launched the series with our first episode in a very, very short-lived set, but we evolved and eventually took the show on the road with the trips to Denver for the AFA's Warfare Symposium. Then it was on to DC for the Navy League's Sea Air Space Expo. We hit up Fort Worth for our visit to the Lockheed Martin F-35 assembly facility. Then we went to Tampa for Soft Week before another couple of trips to DC for the AFA's Airspace and Cyber Conference, and then finally the AUSA annual meeting. And there's another trip that I'm not going to tell you about yet because that episode is still forthcoming. But of course, it takes a team to put together a show like this. So we thought it would be fitting to check in with everyone and hear about a couple of their favorite stories from the year. So let's go ahead and get to it. All right, I am joined now by the rest of our team, Brady Bunch style. In the top right corner, we have senior producer Brett Baker. Below him is our editor, Brian Spencer. And to his right, your left, senior motion designer, graphic artist extraordinaire, Dakota Petillo. Gentlemen, quad fathers, welcome back to the show. Before we get started, we have our favorite debriefs kind of lined up. But guys, we're looking back on year one of Weapons and Warfare. So what do you guys think?
It's been really amazing to, you don't often in your career get a chance to start something from scratch, let alone do it remotely, which is new for kind of everybody. But I think it's been an awesome experience so far, and I'm excited about what we've done and, you know, where we're going.
Yeah, there's a lot of military show voices out there, and I'm been real excited to kind of level up that whole conversation and be part of deciphering the world of militaria.
Yeah, I was looking back earlier today at like our back catalog, and it's crazy to see how much content and things we've covered and all that stuff. It was just, it's really cool. So it was a great year, and looking forward to some more.
And for those who don't know, I'm just going to kind of give a location. This is a remote show, like we're all remote. Brett Baker, you are in Lincoln, Nebraska. Dakota, you are in Denver. Brian, you are in St. Louis. But every week we work together, we meet on Slack, we collaborate, we make fun of each other, and we shoot ideas up and see what floats, right? So really appreciate all the work that you guys do week in and week out to make the show a reality. And, you know, the core part of each one of our shows seems like the debrief, right? It's the main part of each one of our shows. And so this episode, we're choosing our favorite debriefs. My favorite debrief that we did, and I'll kind of give you a few reasons why, was the one that we had done on, or had the one we did on, can the U.S. take out all of China's and Russia's nuclear launch facilities within 2 hours? So there are some British researchers who came out with this paper that said that with conventional weapons only, the U.S. can take out all of China and Russia's nuclear capabilities in 2 hours. It seems like a very crazy claim. And so we talked to the researchers. We also talked to a U.S. intelligence officer who sat on the Russia desk. And I thought this story in particular was a great opportunity for us to showcase what we do best of bringing this world that's, you know, crazy and full of jargon to the average person and making it relatable and the ideas attainable conceivable and able to digest. I think we did a really good job of that. And we also proved that, you know, there is room for debate in this world of weapons and warfare.
The United States and its allies have enough conventional weapons and delivery systems to take out all of Russia and China's nuclear launch sites in about 2 hours. At least according to a pair of British researchers behind a newly published study titled Masters of the Air, Strategic Stability and Conventional Strikes. It's certainly a bold claim, so I reached out to Matt Shoemaker, a former U.S. intelligence officer, for some context.
your background, with your intelligence background, like you were on the Russian desk. So when you see an article that says the U.S. can take out all of Russia and China's nukes in a couple of hours, accurate, inaccurate? What do you think?
The first question I have to ask is, who in the world is claiming this?
That person would be Professor Dan Plesch, who, along with a colleague, authored the Masters of the Air study.
Some years ago, I wrote a piece for The Conversation because I felt rather frustrated about the way the debate was, which has had about 250,000 reads, I think, about a non-nuclear world war, how viable this was. Because it seemed to me that conventional counterforce was really the missing link.
Conventional counterforce is the military tactic of using conventional weapons to target an adversary's nuclear weapons. During the Cold War, counterforce was all about using nukes to stop nukes. Today, Plesch says the U.S. has more than enough capability to wipe out both Russia and China's nuclear arsenals without ever needing to use its own nukes.
So that was my favorite debrief episode from earlier in the year. Let's go ahead and keep this train moving along. Brett Baker, what was your favorite debrief?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to pick because we've done a lot of really cool stories. But I think the one that resonated most with me was one that we kind of had an opportunity to explore when we were at Special Forces Week in Tampa. We met a guy named Jared Shepard who started this thing called Warriors Ethos. And what it really is a transition program for veterans, you know, like myself. Now, I was fortunate. I left the Air Force on a Friday and started at a TV station in San Antonio on a Monday. And I didn't have a difficult journey to travel, but that's not always the case. And so what Jared is doing is really cool and inspiring. And, you know, it's helping a lot of veterans who need that next step. But in telling that story, we found a deeper story of one of the guys that he had helped and maybe one of the last guys you might think would need that kind of assistance in a Medal of Honor winner.
Every year, more than 200,000 men and women leave active duty military service and re-enter civilian life. While most make the move without issue, that's not true for everyone. When Florent Groberg left the Army in 2015, it was not how he planned leaving a career he loved.
I needed to find what my next passion would be.
Started in 2011 by Jared Shepard, himself an Army veteran, Warriors Ethos has helped roughly 2,000 service members take those first steps out of uniform. For Groberg, his circumstances were not all that different from those that had leaned on Warriors Ethos before him, with one notable exception.
The President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, March 3, 1863, has awarded in the name of Congress the Medal of Honor to Captain Florent A. Groberg, United States Army.
For his actions in trying to stop a suicide bomber while escorting a group of coalition and Afghan leaders in the Kunar province of Afghanistan, Captain Groberg received the Medal of Honor. He was also medically retired because of the injuries he suffered trying to save the lives of others.
You look at all the bad things you ever hear about veterans, you know, homeless, unemployment, divorce, whatever else it happens to be, suicide. Those are all failures in transition.
A 2019 study by Pew Research revealed almost half of veterans post-9/11 said readjusting to civilian life was at least somewhat difficult.
Warriors Ethos pushed me in a way that wasn't off-putting. They knew that I had a need and a requirement. I just did not potentially know how to accurately express it at the time. They also understood what type of help I was seeking. And they put a plan together, and we adjusted the plan when things didn't work out the way I wanted it or the way they perceived it. In the end, we found a winning solution, organically.
All right, so that was Brett Baker's favorite debrief, the Warriors Ethos. Just a great organization, and really glad we got to meet up with them at Soft Week. And Brett, like you said, you know, being able to share the stories of folks that you might not think need help in that transition process, you know, and that organization being able to help anyone that comes to them. And I hope I'm sure we'll meet up with them again at a future show. Looking forward to seeing them. So now we'll go to St. Louis hitting up the Lou, Brian, you're the guy who we give you so much disparate pieces and we say, put it all together. And you do every week. You do a great job of that. So in, you know, you've been the guy in the trenches for so long, putting together piece by piece, all of these shows, all these episodes. So you have more of a firsthand look at some of this than maybe some of the rest of us do. So your favorite debrief.
Well, this one rolls right off the tongue. It's the NGIP, Euro NATO Joint Jet Pilot Training Program in Texas. Really cool program. First, I think it's just so cool that we get an opportunity to talk to guys like their wing commander, Colonel Shulman, and have access to somebody like that who's just in charge of this really unique program. And the second thing I think that's so unique about this story is, you know, a lot of offices, branches, of our own military, one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing sometimes. Yet this program joins 14 NATO countries in Texas, all speaking different languages, and all going for that you know, singular mission of securing Europe over this, you know, the skies over Europe. And I just think that's really cool that they're able to overcome, you know, all the bureaucracy of the militaries of each country and then overcome the language barrier, the culture barrier, and just become the best of friends and have brothers in the sky.
All right, Colonel. So, I mean, it started back in the 70s, and you just kind of said it. NGIP is NATO in Texas.
The German Air Force was training their own pilots here just for airspace reasons and the great weather that we have in the state of Texas. As you know from history, as you hit the 70s and you start to hit the 80s, the Cold War really starts to take shape. A lot of the nations in Europe and NATO were looking around like, oh my gosh, we don't have a strong Air Force and we need to build an Air Force. And so as they looked around in Europe, there's just not a lot of capacity in airspace and it was really, really expensive to train fighter pilots. And they kind of looked across the world, they're like, wait a second, the Germans already doing this thing in Texas, can we jump on this bandwagon? And I will tell people it is not a U.S. program with international participation. You know, it is an international program with U.S. participation that happens to be in Texas. And so my job as the NGIP wing commander is to represent the 14 nations equally. I do not speak for the United States, right? Because I need to speak for Romania as much as I need to do for Italy as much as I do the U.S. You know, the partnerships that we make day to day working here to two when our students graduate, right? They go off and do big things. They already know how to integrate in a coalition. And as you know, U.S. doesn't go to conflict alone. We go to conflict with allies and partners. 50% of the U.S. Air Force fighter pilots come through this program. 100% of the fighter pilots for Germany, Denmark, Norway, etc., come through NGIP. If I don't produce them pilots, they don't have an Air Force. As you've seen the news of what Putin is happening, its importance and relevance, I would argue, is, you know, increased to probably where it was in the 80s when it was founded. It probably hasn't seen that spotlight due to the recent years. And, you know, I guess I could publicly thank Vladimir Putin for making our program a spotlight of the world again.
All right, that was our profile on the NGIP program, the Euro-NATO Joint Jet Pilot Training Program in Wichita Falls, Texas. Like you, Brian, I was really glad that we were able to get that story and turn that just some behind-the-scenes stuff. So I used to work with a gal at a station in Wichita Falls who is now married to somebody. I'm not going to say his name properly. His call sign is Venom, who works within the NGIP program. And he was able to put me in touch with the proper public affairs officers and everything. So thank you, K-Cross. You know who you are for helping us get that story. Okay, Dakota. Dakota in Denver. So as our graphics artist, you make our show look better than it should every week. Your ability to kind of take these crazy concepts and make them into, you know, just these beautiful illustrations. You know, really glad that you're working on the show. Glad that we have an opportunity for you to showcase your skills. So on that note, Dakota, what was your favorite debrief this year?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't pick based upon what I thought were the coolest graphics, at least not for the debrief. But I picked episode 33, the piece on additive manufacturing, which is basically like industrial 3D printing with like metal, and then you can CNC or lathe that into a finished part. And I just thought it was really cool that we could like resurrect these like ancient pieces of military tech, you know, these planes that have been flying for 70 years that the factories have been shut down for 40 years or whatever, and, you know, really make a part that's special for them and not have lead times be months or years or have to spin up a full factory. You can spin up something small and get, you know, your part when you need it. I thought that was great, reducing costs. And I think it has tangible benefits for like the real world, like everyday people, you know, when you need, like, you know, 3D printing is so viable. And then if we can move that on to like aerospace or even just a part you need it from Home Depot, you know, kind of thing, you need something custom for your old furnace, you know, things like that. I think it's a really cool practice and I'm really glad we covered it.
To the casual observer, additive manufacturing might look the same as 3D printing, but there is a slight difference: scale. Essentially, it's the difference between printing a chess piece at home and creating a ball valve destined for a Navy vessel. For example, printing this hunk of metal, then machining it into a finished piece ready to be installed on a submarine. It's the kind of efficiency that's making believers out of anyone involved in the process of getting a boat in the water or an aircraft back in the sky. Meeting those needs is important enough that now each branch of the DoD has ways to take the process out of the factory and into the battle space. For the Marine Corps, that means turning additive manufacturing into expeditionary manufacturing, taking the process to where it's needed the most. The Air Force is getting in on the action too. In 2018, Hurricane Michael flattened parts of Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida. The devastation was so complete, the base is still rebuilding much of what was lost. In 2023, that included this printed facility for robotics research. It's the first of its kind on an Air Force base anywhere in the world. The DoD's challenge now is widespread implementation, building the infrastructure that will allow additive manufacturing to shorten supply chains and keep American troops in front of their near-peer adversaries.
All right, 3D printing, additive manufacturing, as it's known in the industry. And like you, Dakota, I'm fascinated with that technology. The more widespread we could make it, the more cost-effective it's going to be. You know, I know that we, the four of us, don't have access, well, at least I don't have access to a 3D printer, but I know we work with folks within Straight or Arrow News that do, and they've been able to 3D print some just, you know, off the wall thing, like a mask, you know, and I just think, like, when's the day going to come where it's like, oh, I need a nail, and I just go to my garage, 3D print it out, and that technology could be down the road very soon because of, you know, the military kind of leading the industry charge to make this cost effective, so. Quad Fathers, thank you so much. That's going to do it for the our favorite debriefs for this portion of the show. Stick around, though, because up next we have our favorite weapons of the week.
Serving you clarity through context, our mission at SAN is to deliver the news straight down the middle. We're different from mainstream media because we spotlight distorted headlines and show you how to do it, too. Discover stories that right and left-leaning outlets are choosing not to cover by using our Media Mist tool. Download the SAN app and turn on notifications to have straight facts delivered right to your phone or tablet, and get straight facts anytime at SAN.com.
One of the things we've learned over the past year is that our viewers really like our Weapon of the Week segment. Those videos consistently garner some of the highest views, and that makes sense, right? Since it's one third of our name, Weapons and Warfare. So let's do this in reverse order from last to first. That means, Dakota, you're going to lead us off since you were the last one and the debrief. Go ahead and lead us off. Your favorite Weapon of the Week.
This one I did pick for the graphics, but not the graphics I did. I'm going with episode 38, the Andrels anime launch trailer, where they had that sweet, I don't even know what it was, like a minute and a half anime style thing where they were like fighting and building the missiles on the assembly line, and they all like kind of fly off at the end. It was classic. One thing that also stuck out to me was like how simple the actual missiles are. They said something like 50% less parts than a normal missile of that size, and then it can be assembled with 10 or less tools. Like, that seems crazy. Like, if I could build it in my garage, basically, that seems like something shouldn't be possible. So hats off to the team that made the anime trailer, and then hats off to the engineers that made a very simple missile that probably works very, very well.
That was Dakota Patillo's favorite weapon of the week. Basically, Anduril's launch promo for its arsenal, I think is what they call it. It's, you know, autonomous facility to make all of these things. That's not built yet, but, you know, probably going to be at some point someday. So, yeah, Dakota, thank you so much for that. We'll keep this train going a little bit more. Brian, you know, you have brought some ideas for us for weapon of the week. You got a great eye for finding things that just kind of stand out. So really interested to see what your favorite weapon of the week is.
So mine is actually, it's a drone, but it's not just because it's a drone. It's actually, it's fuel source that makes it interesting. It's from Heaven Drones, it's a company, and they use hydrogen instead of electricity. And I personally prefer hydrogen as a fuel source for these types of things over electricity because it's the most abundant resource in the world. And you can pull it straight from the air. You don't have to mine for it. What's really cool is while they're up there, since it's in the air, they can just make more fuel while they're up there. And Heaven Drones, you know, it's just a pretty cool direction to diversify the tools and weapons that would be available to the military in some future. And while it's not an application that probably, can be folded in exactly right now, but it's, a really cool experiment for emerging technologies.
To look at Heaven Drones' newest project, the H2D250, you might not think it's all that different from dozens of other similar-looking models looking to claim a piece of the marketplace. But the company's founder says it's what's under the hood that makes it something new with which to be reckoned.
So it's highly pressurized hydrogen that is sitting in a tank, small amount, about a pound of hydrogen, that's it. And then we have a fuel cell. The fuel cell is taking that hydrogen and slowly making that into electricity. So we're kind of creating, it's like a power plant in the sky. So that's how it works. We're going from, again, 30 minutes to about 3 hours. And our new systems that actually include a wing can already achieve 10 hours of flight time.
So why hydrogen? Levinson says it offers 3 to 5 times the energy density of traditional batteries, extending flight time by hours. Pretty near ideal for places like the Indo-Pacific.
All right, that was our video editor, Brian, and his pick for weapon of the week, his favorite weapon of the week, Heaven Drones and their hydrogen-powered drones. And I'm going to say this again because, you know, like we did when this show originally aired, I'm sure there's a lot of people who see that and think hydrogen-powered, that's really bad idea, that's a bomb. Just floating around out there. The folks at Heaven Drones have assured us that they have done the testing and done the drop tests and all that, and it's safe. It's not going to blow up. Even if you shoot it, it won't blow up. So I'm going to take their word on it because I don't have a bunch of hydrogen to go shoot. So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and keep things going. Super producer Brett Baker, you are with me on these trips that we have taken. You obviously do a lot of the writing that brings the show together. So you're some of the first eyes that has a look at what we're going to be maybe doing for our weapon of the week. So your favorite this year was?
Oddly enough, it's not a piece of hardware. It's not a piece of technology. It's a unit that the Army is putting together. They're watching what's happening in the Ukraine, and we're learning lessons. They're learning lessons real time, and they're going ahead and putting those into effect. And they came up with something called, and I have to look this up because it's a military thing. It's too long for me to remember. The Multifunctional Reconnaissance Company. What it is, it's about equipping small units of reconnaissance teams with the tech and the equipment to perform different operations, different missions. They've all got their own special targets and objectives. But I thought as a weapon of the week, the soldier really is, you know, the ultimate weapon, and putting the right tools in their hands and the Army looking forward in their attempts to modernize and look forward to whatever our next conflict is. With these units, I think is really impressive, and I think it's only going to expand from obviously where they're just testing it now, and it's going to become a big thing.
Even though the war in Ukraine is still very much an active conflict, the lessons being learned are changing the way American military leadership views the future of combat.
They have a pretty good view over the perimeter.
Lighter, more lethal units equipped with state-of-the-art technology are seen as the way forward. MFRCs, like this one with the 101st Airborne Division, are part of the Army's most significant transformation in more than 40 years. This elite recon unit now has access to drones and a host of combat-ready tech, all designed to keep an eye on the enemy while staying safely concealed.
And we've been tasked with being painfully light and disproportionately lethal in order to sense, kill, and protect on behalf of the brigade.
It's a marked shift from focusing on counterterrorism operations to equipping units to deter enemy forces and take advantage of current technology and warfighting trends.
All right, Brett Baker, senior producer Brett Baker's pick for weapon of the week. Brett, you looked it up. So the official name one more time.
Yep, and I just clicked off my screen. Here it is. The Multifunctional Reconnaissance Company, or the MFRC.
MFRC. All right. Great concept, and you're absolutely right. The things that we're learning right now from the war in Ukraine is just informing so much of what our own armed forces are doing and will be doing as they prepare for potentially great power competition against China, Russia, and potentially their allies. All right. So my favorite or my pick for weapon of the week is pretty timely. This show obviously is coming out on Christmas Day, December 25th. If you're on the East Coast, if you've watched news at all, you know about drones in New Jersey, right? So this piece of tech is called the Enforce Air 2 from Defend. And it's a piece of technology that not only does it allow the user to track a wide range of drones within its airspace, it also allows them, you know, they can identify the drone, like, yes, that's a drone. This is what kind of drone it is. This is where the pilot or the operator of that drone is. And, oh, by the way, let's go ahead and just take over the drone, and now we control it. It's a piece of technology that is very much in need. U.S. laws have to change in order for local law enforcement and others to have access to it. But it's a vital piece of technology. It exists today, and pretty soon it's probably going to be pretty widespread.
A quick search of practically any social media platform will yield hundreds of clips of Ukraine's drone operators inflicting devastating damage on troops and equipment. It's that kind of destruction counter-drone manufacturers are working to mitigate. Enter Defend Solutions in the Enforce Air 2.
What we're known for is the actual RF cyber takeover. We take over the drone. The drone now has a new master, if you will, and it's landed safely in a pre-designated zone.
Jeffrey Starr, Defend Solutions CMO, says this takeover approach not only reduces or eliminates the number of limitations found in early counter-drone technology, it opens a window into all kinds of information.
We're identifying what is this drone, what is the make, the model, the manufacturer, the serial number, but more importantly, its capabilities. So you understand, and is this friendly, is this authorized, is this unauthorized? So you have this identification phase. And then ultimately, you move into mitigation.
Star tells Weapons and Warfare, this approach not only protects friendly forces, it adds the ability to gather intel on adversaries.
You can capture the drone, you can capture the intelligence associated with the drone too. And so obviously you capture it very, very surgical, very precise. You don't have the collateral damage dangers, you don't have the disruption dangers, you don't have the operational disturbance. You above all have continuity.
Another selling point of the Enforce Air 2 is adaptability. Ranging from tactical, vehicular, or stationary deployment, heck, you can even throw it in a backpack.
All right, so that was my pick for my favorite weapon of the week, and that was the Quadfathers. Quadfathers, wave, say hello to our audience and goodbye. That's going to do it for the group portion of this week's episode. But before we cut you guys off, any final thoughts that any of you would like to share?
It's just, it's been a great ride so far. You know, this is an ambitious project that we were tasked with, and I couldn't imagine three better guys to be doing it with. The fact that it works so well and it looks so good and that we're all remote and we never actually hardly see each other is pretty impressive to me.
Yeah, I'll just go next. The commitment to excellence from everybody involved in this has been pretty great, and we pick each other up when things get tough, and so it's been a pretty cool year, and onward to 2025.
Yeah, I think it's been a great year. The product is amazing, and thanks to you guys for watching and sharing and all of the stuff that makes a huge difference. And you know, we look forward to sharing more stuff with you guys in the coming year.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much for your commitment to the show, for the work that you do for the show, for your friendship. Like Brett said, couldn't imagine doing this with anybody else. So yeah, big things are in store for 2025, including maybe the four of us get together in a beer hall sometime. Maybe. I don't know.
3D, real world.
So you've heard from the crew that makes our show happen every week. Now it's time to hear from you. So let's check out some of our favorite viewer comments of the year. Our first one comes to us from our story inside the Air Force Research Lab. A YouTube viewer that goes by BT writes, man, your channel is really good. Refreshing. A lot of bad military channels out there. Well, BT, we agree. We think we've got a pretty good thing going here. But as my grandma always said, the biggest room in the world is room for improvement. So while we thank you for watching and being a part of the show, BT, we also want to say buckle up, because 2025 is shaking up to be a great one already, so stick around. Next up, a YouTube viewer named Buck comments on this story from Ryan Macbeth, talking about disinformation and misinformation. Ryan Macbeth rocks. Don't spread misinformation and he'll leave you alone. He will catch you if you don't heed my warning. You are absolutely right, Buck. I've met plenty of other Ryans in my 42 years on the planet, but Ryan Macbeth stands out. His commitment to his country is obviously admirable, but it was his commitment to truth that first caught my eye. And as a journalist, I just love a good misinformation takedown. We have more stories with Ryan Macbeth on tap for next year as well. So Buck, keep watching. All right. Our next viewer comment comes to us from our most popular episode of the year, our trip to the Lockheed Martin F-35 assembly in Fort Worth, Texas. Mr. Chris Rogers writes, pretty cool episode. Thank you and everyone for this awesome news info, really amazing. You're right, Chris, the F-35 is really amazing. There have been a lot of headlines about the plane recently and whether or not the U.S. should keep its contract with Lockheed Martin. I could, but I'm not going to turn this into a rap segment on the importance of the F-35 to great power competition. It's really important. But the F-35 is the most advanced fighter ever made. Israel took out all of Iran's air defenses with F-35s and didn't lose a single plane. So while the incoming administration may have some doubts about the merits of the contract with Lockheed Martin to buy more of the planes to service the fifth generation fighter, Chris Rogers is right. The F-35 is amazing. And that's going to do it for this week's comms check. Thanks to all the viewers who commented. If you'd like to see your comment, then just go ahead and leave it below and we might address it on a future upcoming episode of Weapons and Warfare.
All opinions expressed in this segment are solely the opinions of the contributors.
All right, folks, that'll do it for us for this episode and this year of Weapons and Warfare. I honestly can't believe how fast 2024 has flown by, or that we built a show from scratch and churned out a new episode almost every single week. For those who know how much of an effort and energy it takes to create engaging content, you know what a big lift that is. And like I said earlier, it absolutely would not be possible without such a talented team of individuals, which sort of brings me to my wrap topic. There is no success without teamwork. There is not a single successful person today who did not get to where they are without help, without a team backing them up and supporting them. John Elway had Terrell Davis and the best offensive line in football. Jordan had Pippen, Rodman, and some other key role players. This episode drops on Christmas, so it's topical to say even Jesus had his disciples. The point is getting the right people in your corner or being the right person in someone else's corner is how success is achieved. You may have to go through parts of your journey alone, but if you try to do it all on your own, the finished product will never be as good as it could be. Sometimes it takes work to build the right team, and it can be a grind, no doubt. But the payoffs are always worth it. So for senior producer Brett Baker, video editor Brian Spencer, and graphics artist Dakota Patillo, I'm Ryan Robertson, Straight Arrow News, signing off.